Welcome to the Indisposable Podcast, produced by Upstream. I'm your host, Brooking Gatewood.
And I'm your co-host, Matt Prindeville.
Thanks for joining for another episode celebrating solutions to plastic pollution.
This episode is sponsored by Tandem Coffee Roasters. Working on it since 2012, Tandem Coffee Roasters in Portland, Maine, believes in good coffee and pursuing a future that is free of single-use cups. Reduce, reuse, and spread joy. TandemCoffee.com.
Hey, what's up, Solutionaires? Welcome back to the Indisposable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Prindeville, and today I'm very excited to have R-Cup's founder, Michael Martin, and their general manager and CMO, Keiko Nicolini, on the show. Some of our listeners may have attended a concert or an event where R-Cup has provided their reusable cup service to replace single-use cups. And one of the special things that they do is they work with some of the world's biggest artists like U2, Jack Johnson, and the Rolling Stones to engage their audiences around reuse. But R-Cup is about a lot more than just reusable cups. Like Upstream, they're working to build and support the reuse movement to disrupt single use across the board. And this year, they're expanding into reusable to-go ware for takeout and delivery. Welcome to the podcast, Michael and Keiko.
Thanks so much for having us, Matt. We're so thrilled to be here.
Yeah, thank you. We are huge fans of Upstream, too. You guys are doing such amazing work. So thanks for having us on here.
Thanks so much. You guys are kind. So, Michael, I want to start with you. So I remember talking with you earlier, and you were saying that you got into this business through your work to help green the music industry. So how did you get started with that, and what was the motivation for you to want to change how concerts and events are run?
Well, the obvious way, I was an investment banker on Wall Street. Right? That's the obvious way to start off with this, right? No, it was actually, I was. And Exxon Valdez happened back in the late 80s. And I thought this is just ridiculous that business is ruining the world. Capitalism is. And in fact, capitalism should be helping the world. And so back in 1990, I started on this path of how can you use business and culture to create positive change. And the first thing that we did is it helped to make Earth Day be an annual event by producing stadium concerts all across the country that are broadcast nationally. And that's how I got started with the greening of the music industry, because the thought was, well, you can't put on a concert for Earth Day and have it be produced in an unsustainable manner. And
that's
how the whole process started. And that, just parenthetically, that Effect Partners, the company, other company that I run, that's what we do. We identify these major social change issues. And whether it's climate change or toxic reductions or plant-based foods, and we work with businesses and culture to create change with that, creating the first global warming campaign and, you know, launching a lot of organic food marketing efforts, working with major corporations from Apple and Target and so forth to help them figure out how to have a great sustainability strategies and, you know, and plant-based foods and so forth. So, but really,
that's so great.
Yeah, so but go back to, I mean, it was all about, you know, producing these concerts that with, you know, 40,000-50,000 people, 500,000 people on the mall in Washington, D.C. And there was no recycling back then. There was no thought of sustainability with live events back then. And it was funny because Steve Miller Band asked me to create a document he could use on his tour rider to get the venues to do sustainability things that we were doing at the Earth Day concert. And so I created this document called the Enviro Rider.
Which sort of became, and when was this? What year was this?
This was 1991.
Wow.
Yeah, way back then.
I might have been going to those Steve Miller Band concerts back then.
Yeah, right. That's when things were black and white back then. You remember that?
Right.
But that started to become sort of the Bible for green event production. And we updated every year. And then Jack Johnson came along when he was doing some clubs and heard about it. And they asked if we could really turbocharge it. And so we've made this massive 20-page document working with a lot of leaders of the environmental movement and scientists and so forth about what could be done to reduce the environmental impact of concerts and touring and festivals and so forth. And so over the years, Effect Partners have greened, you know, the tours for U2, Jack Johnson, Dave Matthews Band, Black Eyed Peas, a variety of artists over the years. And in the process of this, you know, just really saw that there's a huge challenge with the solid waste that's generated at live events. And that was really sort of the genesis for ARCOP. And, you know, looking at this, realizing the power of culture, the power of music, the power of 50,000 people together and seeing something done the right way rather than the wrong way, we realize can really change the world.
That's so great, Michael. So Keiko, you come from a hospitality background. As I remember a previous call, you said that your parents ran a restaurant. So how did you find your way from working in your folks' restaurant to ARCOP?
Yeah, my parents are restaurateurs here in New York City, and I grew up in hospitality. I tried really, really hard to get out of the food and wine business. But alas, I spent the better part of 20 years working in wineries, primarily in California. I had been born and raised in New York City. I left in the late 90s. I packaged up all of my belongings and sent them general delivery to Hilo, Hawaii, where I stayed living on the Hamakua coast in a 28-foot teepee until...
So great.
Yeah. No plumbing, no electricity, a far cry from Manhattan for sure.
Right.
And then I finally settled for about 20 years, the better part of 20 years in Northern California. And that was my compromise. Northern California, beautiful Northern California, was my compromise between New York City and Hawaii. And I began working in a marketing capacity at Iron Horse Vineyards, which is a really stunning estate vineyard and winery in Sonoma County. Mm. I went on to run Flowers Vineyard, which is right on the Sonoma coast, the first ridge in from the largest mass of water on the planet. And it became really clear to me that there was an immediate link between the quality of the wines that we were able to make and our teams and owners' commitment and relationship and stewardship of the land that we were growing
nice.
On. And I think those experiences of really living so close to the land in Hawaii and working in agriculture instilled a really deep love and commitment to the planet for me. In 2010, I helped to launch a shatterproof, reusable wine glass to market. And it was really important that we put reuse at the forefront of all of the messaging.
Nice.
And that product is called Govino. I was with them for a few years, and then I went back years later to help them again. And in that time, it was really wonderful to see a change in cultural awareness around plastic waste. And in that time, I was able to really change all of our packaging to paper and non-plastic packaging, all minimal materials used, and soy-based inks and water-based inks, and also change all of our marketing activations to closed-loop and reuse-driven activations.
Nice.
And in doing that work, I needed some mentors. I needed some help to figure out how to make the right and responsible choices. And I met Michael initially wanting him to use our glasses for our cup. trying to sell to him. And he very quickly became a mentor for me. And when I was ready to leave Govino again, I went knocking on his door.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, we've got believe it or not, several wineries just down the street from me here in Maine, and a lot of them do events. And I've noticed that the reusable plastic wine glass is a thing. So, you know, you guys were the innovators, I'm assuming, on this.
Yeah. We were for sure first to market, really focused on reuse and also performance from a tasting standpoint. But
right.
For sure, it's a whole thing.
Nice. That's great. So let's talk about our cup. Michael, you know, I remember you talking about you've been working with your company, Effect Partners. You've got partnerships with all these incredible artists. And so what are you hearing from them? What's the motivation to add another company on to all the incredible work you're doing around sustainability and events?
Well, I've made a career out of sort of being the crazy guy in the corner and saying, hey, you know, we should do something about these issues that are facing us. And working with all these artists and all the festivals and all the greening effort and everything that was out there, a common challenge was the how do you eliminate the waste? And artists would talk about standing on the stage at the end of the show and just seeing all these cups on the ground at the end of the show, right? And so over the years, I tried everything to try to get like recycling working and getting a good waste system going. And oh my God, you know, neon signs above the recycling bins and set this up and everything. Mm-hmm. I finally had a dream come true where Live Nation brought us in to say, okay, we have these 40 amphitheaters around the country. Tell us what we can do to eliminate our plastic waste and our waste. And so we set up this amazing system of there was only recycling and only and compostable waste. And we only had compost bins and we had recycling and this is going to be great. And in fact, it was so frustrating because even though we had trash goalies and we had rewards and everything got commingled. At the end of the day, yeah. Everything got thrown into the trash bins, right? And also, we analyzed across the country, there's very few places where you could actually do industrial composting. And the more we dug into the composting and the bioplastics and all the waste, that is not a solution. And basically, here it was, the world's largest tour. We were working with U2, the world's largest promoter and event producer. Billboard magazine has called us the guru of live event greening, and several artists, Mike, you got to come up with a solution. And so one of the things that when we were greening U2's tour, the 360 tour, I had heard in Zurich, they were, you know, a deal where you could pay 10 euros, you get a cup, use it throughout the event, and at the end of the event, you return the cup in and get your 10 euros back. And I love that idea.
Yeah,
so I talked with U2's management and I say, can we do this on your tour? So in the, and they agreed because, you know, we'd been working with them on all their strategy. And one of the things that they've been so great because they always challenged me, and the same thing with Jack Johnson, to innovate what's the next thing. And that's how we've been in a position to be, you know, introduce carbon dioxide offsets for the music industry, and introduce composting, introduce organic food over the years, all these different things we've been able to bring in. And so this, we felt, was a tremendous opportunity to really start to tackle the solid waste crisis and around the live events.
So you literally had artists, the artists that you were working with, these, you know, huge musical acts that are touring all around the world, they were coming to you and saying, Michael, we got to solve this problem. Let's put you to work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is basically a problem that needed a solution. And, you know, this whole idea of, you know, of a reuse model, the idea of cups that could be reused, was just, it was happening in Europe a little bit, but it was just completely foreign to the United States. And and so crazily enough, I knew some impact investors and from a social venture circle, a group I'd been a member of for a while, and talked to them about this idea. And I got some to help put some money up, and then allowed us to go out. And in September 8th, 2017, we launched with U2's Joshua Tree Tour in Minneapolis, and it's been just taken off since then. And of course, there was a little pandemic that sort of slowed us down a little bit, but we can talk about that in a bit. But it was it's been an amazing ride because we did U2, and then basically, you know, the Rolling Stones and Rod Stewart, Mumford and Sons, Bon Jovi, and Mickey Rogers and Jack Johnson, all these amazing artists that are aware about these issues, heard about it, and basically reached out to us. And we just went out and toured with them and built the concept out there.
That's phenomenal. So question for Keiko, how does it work? I have been hearing about R-Cup for a long time, but I've actually never participated in a show yet where you guys have your reusable cup service set up. So how does it work? Let's say that I was, let's say it's pre-pandemic or hopefully later this year at some point when we can all go back to concerts again. And, I walk into the arena down here in Portland, Maine. I'm going to go catch a show. How does it work?
Sure. So, the goals are to create a change in consumer behavior and to create impact. And so the scope of how we get to work really begins far before anybody's playing any music, right? Partner with the artists and their management. We partner with the venues and arenas to craft messaging and campaign around reuse and awareness. And then we have a logistical and operational team that comes and delivers our reusables to the concession stands. We staff events to help not only expedite the service, because we don't want to slow down service and we don't want to be an obstacle for the concessionaires. We want to facilitate mm-hmm. everything that they're there to do, and also inform the guests and get them excited.
It sounds like there's like an outreach and education thing that you guys have to do every time, right? So you're also, it's not just about engaging the concert goers, but it's also about really engaging the people that are serving beer and serving soda and things like that. So, I imagine that's a lot of work.
It is. By the time we complete an event, we have touched every department of the venue, their operations team, their waste management team, their concession team, often their sports team. We have touched all of the guests and given them some education and information around the need for reuse. We work with all of the waste management and cleanup crew. And then we finish by offering a environmental impact report back to each the artist and their team.
Wow.
And also the venue. And so that's how we got to market, and quite successfully. Right in March, we began to secure what we call permanent activations with different stadiums and arenas across the country, where, frankly, Michael's plan worked, right? Michael yep. had this plan to, as he's done in other iterations of his work at Effect Partners and before R-Cup, to really leverage or use the cultural influence of the artist mm-hmm. to create recognition around this need, knowing that it would stick long term. And so just how aspects of the EnviroRider have been incorporated into regular operations at the stadium and arena level, we were starting to see that same trend of venues wanting to just bring us on full time. So then the pandemic hit.
right. Yeah. So let's talk about that. So, I mean, you guys were going gangbusters, and I noticed all the incredible tours that had picked up R-Cup and were, using your service. And you have this grand plan. And I think it's a really smart one to, work with the innovators and the early adopters to kind of get people excited about it and then work to mainstream it so that you don't have to cart the cups around. You can literally be on site, like you were saying. So you were moving to go on site at a bunch of venues, and you probably had some more tours lined up. And then, what happened last March?
Yeah, I mean, we came to a screeching and sudden halt, like many people across the world.
Yeah.
We had to make a lot of changes and make them fast. We found a lot of efficiencies in our office and in our operations. We sadly had to furlough a bunch of our team, and you know, our team is our most valuable resource. Our team is our most valuable resource. We have the
I echo that. I want to jump in and echo that if I can. That's amazing. We're so fortunate. Charging into a cake, I'll say, but it's true.
This is the most, like, first of all, the most fun and wonderful, but also like committed and ride or die group of individuals.
Nice. You understand that.
It's a privilege to work with them. Unfortunately, we had to furlough much of our events team. And, you know, and in that time, Michael and I huddled up and tried to figure out, well, now what? You know, we can't stop. There's still need. We have this team. We can't disband, you know, the posse. What are we going to do? And, in that time, the concept of essential business became, you know, surfaced, right?
Right.
And we had always had in, you know, in our 3-year plan and our 5-year plan, product line extensions because they were being demanded of us. You know, in our contracts that we had been signing previous to shutdown, we would put that we would revisit, we would include that we would revisit other reusables in our program 6 months, 12 months, 18 months.
Yeah, ago. I remember talking to Michael about this, yeah, early on.
And so we took a quick pivot and began to focus on to go where, as you mentioned, I grew up in hospitality, in restaurant operations my whole life. And, what we really needed to focus on, was the technology that would allow us to put reusables, into the world, bring them back, and then drive, consumer behavior to want to participate in a program like this.
So great. So, yeah, so, I mean, with crisis comes opportunity, right? So you guys looked at the events part of the business is shut down. We're going to have to wait on the venues moving forward with bringing our cups and service on site. But there's this opportunity because everybody's getting food to go or take out or delivered to their home. You know, all these apps like Uber Eats are blowing up. And so you see this opportunity and you realize that there's a moment that you're in to move this idea forward that you had of expanding beyond the cup service. And it's my understanding that you guys have launched this just recently in the last several months. Is that right?
Yeah, we're launching our line. It's called Rware. We're launching in Minneapolis in partnership with People's Organic Cafe and the Lynn Hall initially. We needed to move and we needed to move fast. And it became very clear to us that collaboration was really how we were going to accelerate most quickly. And so we did something that that was extremely valuable. Not natural, but we partnered with our competitor. And
wow.
Yeah. So in Seattle, there's a company called Ancora. And Ancora has grown from a business called Green Grub Box. And they had done small trials with reusable to-go-ware in the Seattle market, but began to build the technology to facilitate this. We met many times with their founder and CEO, Ted Wallace, and had a great chemistry, had a clear vision, were really able to make the mission the most important thing. And so we got to work and we built it's a three-facing technology system. You know, we have our administrative part where we're able to fully track all inventory and deal with all of the administrative and financial aspects. The restaurant operator has a portal as well where they can also track and see their impact, but also order and deal with invoicing as well. And then really exciting is the customer facing app, where not only can they scan in their containers and scan out their containers, but we have built what we call an impact calculator.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, where they can see in real men's terms what the impact of their behavior is as related to these reusable containers, each in water use, in energy use, and oil. And in addition to that, they see not only the impact of their behavior, but the impact of the program overall. So they can be motivated by the growth and impact of the program. We also have an environmental news feed. Which allows us to curate news, but also offer access to calls to action, to pending legislation, to local cleanups, ways that individuals can become involved in climate impact. And a really, really vital piece in all of this is a loyalty and rewards program. So coming from the hospitality industry, it was very, very important that we not only create opportunities to empower consumers to make these changes that we need to make, but also to support our restaurants in a time that they've really just been
absolutely
impacted.
Absolutely.
So the loyalty program is customized and we design it with each operator. We have a self-scan return station at every restaurant outlet. It drives their customers back to their doors. When you scan your container in, you get points. When you have enough points, you redeem them for whatever the restaurant chooses. And it's also a way to create a meaningful connection between the restaurateur and their clientele, because they're not able to host them in the dining room many times.
Right.
Okay, so how can we make these connections meaningful?
You know, I've always thought about why more restaurants didn't do like their own reusable container program, because, you know, you think about, you know, for example, my wife and I, we love to go get soup at this incredible place down the street here. They make the best soups. The guy is like a soup savant in the kitchen, and we like to take them home and heat them up later and have them for dinner and lunch and so forth. But you know, it's just in your classic kind of throwaway. I guess it's a recyclable plastic container, but who knows if it's being recycled anymore. And you know, I've always thought like, okay, what is the barrier for businesses to kind of start that up? Because you recognize that there becomes this loyalty when I've got a container that I got it that's reusable and I know it's reusable. Like for example, we do the same thing with milk. There's all these incredible local dairies that do raw milk in glass bottles with deposits now, and we've become, you know, purchasers of that because we've just gotten used to that system, and we go back and we bring our bottles back and we get our new glass bottles and with the milk in it and so forth. And so you guys, it seems like what you're doing is helping the restaurants. You're taking the obstacles away for them participating in an initiative like this.
Absolutely. And at the same time, really driving kind of our larger vision, which is to create an infrastructure for a reusable economy. So once you drop your Rware container into the return station, our team comes and picks it up and takes it to our wash hub. We wash, we sterilize, we restock the restaurant. And it's not a coincidence that we are launching in Minneapolis. Michael has a long time relationship, and we've cultivated a wonderful strategic partnership with the folks at Ecolab. So again, you know, making sure that not only is this a program that's safe and good for the planet, but also, you know, safe and good from a public health standpoint.
Yeah, Michael, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the long-term vision here, and also like what do you need to do to scale this idea?
That's a good question. I mean, hopefully you've been able to hear from what we've communicated thus far our mission really is to build the infrastructure, national infrastructure for reuse. And part of that is using culture as a platform for educating about the single-use crisis and solutions to that, right? And in other words, and this comes from 30 years of, you know, these topics I mentioned earlier. Okay, you educate people about global warming, you educate about organic food, or the idea of externalities, the different plant-based foods. What's needed to move culture? It's really about the making it easy to do the right thing as opposed to the wrong thing. It's about education. It's about role models. It's about, as you alluded to earlier there, with making it really easy for the restaurants to do the right thing. Similarly, right, with the concessionaires. It's funny, when we first started this, I thought, so easy to rent cups out of, oh my God, it is so complicated, right? There's so many different pieces to it, right? To make it work properly. I mean, as Keiko went through all those different things that we do. I mean, frankly, you know, if we just wanted to sell cups, we could be really profitable. We could, you know, our goal though is to create this change. It's about macro system change. And as Keiko alludes to there, one of our basic beliefs around effect partners and the work we do, it's about creating superordinate goals, the idea of a vision that other people can participate in. And collaboration is part of that. And collaboration is an accelerator, right? So the idea is that, you know, we want to work, which Keiko alluded to, the Green Grub Box and the Core and so forth. I mean, what we need to do, what our goal is to really be essentially the, you know, a catalyst, a tip of the spear, a role model for how reuse can be done and how we can help inspire that. That's part of the reason we love Upstream, because seriously, our missions are so similar aligned, right? We both are trying to achieve educating people about reuse, about the better options, better solutions, you know, and looking at the reality of the world that we have now and where we're going. We have got to change how we're operating, and it needs to happen in this way. So that's really our long-term vision, is to build the national infrastructure for reuse. And what's needed to scale? I mean, it's about some of the stuff we've been doing, I think, in terms of being on the cutting edge, innovation, technology, you know, really continuing to focus on using cultural icons. A lot of these artists that we've talked about have invested in RCUP. You know, it's continuing. This is why it's great working with you guys, is policy support. You know, what you guys have done in, you know, in Berkeley, for example, in San Francisco, tremendous, and other markets that Miriam especially is doing is absolutely brilliant, because it has to be essentially a full court press to create systemic change, right? You know,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, the partnerships like the Ecolab is such a critical one, particularly with COVID. I mean, we believe the best sanitation option out there in the marketplace because of our partnership with Ecolab and our processes that we've learned over the last several years of how to do this on scale. You know, and just really, it's about empowering consumer behavior to create this change. And then, of course, in funding, you know, we've been really fortunate that impact investors are seeing what we're doing, see the vision, see the potential, and are wanting to see this grow. So, you know, as we look at this, as we are in the same way that we operate in about 25 markets, our goal was to build a national reuse brand, which we believe that we have done, and to basically use that to build the operations in the more markets. Ourware with the Rturn app is going to really be able to allow us to go into most major markets in the country.
You know, I was just having a conversation with Karen, the CEO of Conscious Container, that's working to bring refillable beverage bottles back. And we were talking about the Oregon refillable beverage container system for brewers out there, and how that's a system that works. You know, you have a company that's providing these clean refillable containers to, I think it's virtually all the brewers in Oregon. And they've been doing this for quite some time now. And, you know, here we are at a junction point, right, where, you know, I think in many ways, in especially the, you know, the left coast and the northeast, we've kind of maxed out recycling. And we've also just recognized the limitations of recycling as a way to actually impact overconsumption or impact plastic pollution. And we recognize that we have to have more upstream solutions, like getting people what they want without generating any waste in the first place. And so as I think about, you know, what you're talking about with building out the infrastructure, what are some of the barriers to do that? And what are some of the ways that we can overcome those barriers to building out this infrastructure in cities across America?
That's a great question, Matt. I think that as I look at this, the challenge is creating change. There's so much inertia, and there's systems that are set up that you have to go up against. So what you have to look at is creating alternative systems that make economic and operational sense. And so one is inertia. The other is community support. A big part is education. Right. Having WASH hubs is part of the reason why we are excited about our unique partnership with Ecolab, is to develop, you know, just state-of-the-art WASH hubs. And one of the things that has been exciting over the last 4 years, almost 4 years since we've been operating, is we fortunately made every mistake in the book, I think, so that we know exactly what needs to happen to make this thing work properly, right? And yeah. We feel pretty confident about what the components are that are needed. So, you know, an operational excellence to pull that together. You know, it needs to be macro systemic change, right? Communities need to be involved. It's across the board. And so a vision needs to be created. And that goes back to the superordinate goal concept of this can be a better solution. You talk about the bottles up in Oregon. We used to have complete returnable systems until the disposable industry entered our lives back in the late 50s, right? So right, we know it right. works. We know we can do it. It just has to make economic and operational sense. Keiko, how would you answer that?
I mean, I agree with everything that you're saying, Michael. I think the pieces that I might add are really engaging and getting all the different stakeholders to the table, the businesses, the community members, the government. So much of the work that we depend on upstream for and really which helps dictate our growth is what is happening with legislation and either taxation or ordinance around single use and disposables. That's to us an indicator of when we can sometimes enter a market. So in addition to infrastructure legislation and also making sure that the work that we're doing is being done in an equitable way. And so all individuals have access to our programs. A big part of the design of Rware was to create a program that did not require a deposit and did not put a insurmountable or unrealistic cost to the operator. And so we did this in each our selection of containers, working with local city and county grant programs to see how we can get our restaurants some support. But again, getting all parties involved in creating these solutions.
So let's say we have a lot of listeners from the policy world that listen into the podcast here. And let's say you've got a city council member in a, you know, some city in the country that's listening in right now and wants to know, how do I get Rware and Rcup to come to my city? What would you tell them?
Anybody can reach us via our website. I get all of the submissions personally, and I answer them all. You can find us at rware.com. You can find us at rcup.com. Our technology is called Rturn. You can reach us at rturn.com. Any of those will lead directly to us, and we're happy to snap to and get back to you as soon as we can.
And to be clear, that's rcup.com. As opposed to Rcup.
Gotcha. So what do you need from, you know, city governments? And I mean, is there, you know, I know you guys have done great job getting investors from the recording industry and from institutional investors and things like that. But do you need public investment? Do cities need to be investing in helping to build this reuse infrastructure? I mean, they're invested in solid waste infrastructure. They're invested in recycling infrastructure. What do cities need to be doing to help build out the new reuse service economy?
This is my issue, Matt. I've been obsessed with this notion of externalities and full cost accounting and how, in fact, our system does not fully account for the true cost of a lot of products that are put into the marketplace. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, why are the companies that are making the plastic cups not having to pay for the recycling or disposal of plastic, that whole notion. And you know, when I look at from the standpoint, as you see, they're having to bear a meaningful cost on setting up recycling systems. And as you alluded to earlier, you know, who knows what's happening with recycling in a lot of markets right now, you know, with where the market's at. And so they're basically paying for these other companies who are making profit off of a lot of this single-use packaging. From a food waste standpoint, that's the case too. So the thought is, you know, it makes sense for cities that they actually look at what it's costing their city to deal with the waste that's being generated by not having reuse systems. All of a sudden, it starts to make very good economic sense to look at investing and supporting something like this, right? And that's, you know, that's one thing. The other thing that Miriam and your team have done such a great job, as I alluded to earlier, with the small fee in Berkeley and other markets that's being hit, which more accurately reflects the cost of the disposal cost and so forth.
Right.
So
right.
Those are things that are just basically leveling the playing field, so it's fair, right?
Yeah, we were, you know, I was just talking to a colleague of mine about just how we're in a similar place to where renewable energy was maybe 20, 25 years ago, where you had all these subsidies for fossil fuels. And, you know, we were trying to figure out how do we bring more renewable energy online. And of course, initially, it required some significant government support to get things up to scale. But now here we are, and in many parts of the country, solar is less, it costs less than fossil fuel based energy, and wind power is blowing up all over the place. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're at that early stage here where governments are just starting to understand that this is the future, and they need to figure out like how they're going to invest in building out this new reuse service economy. And I think that, you know, it's one of the goals of our launching the Government Reuse Forum was really to get city governments to see and understand that this is something that is not only cool and fun, but it's something that they want to be investing in because they can actually be saving money, and they can be helping to, you know, not just protect the environment, but actually save money from less solid waste costs, less litter that they're cleaning up, less stormwater cleanup costs, and things like that. So anyway, you know, just getting back to the competition for your idea here, you know, I keep hearing about these infinitely recyclable aluminum cups that are kind of showing up at stadiums. You know, what's your take on those?
What's your take?
I mean, my take is that this is a distraction. And I think that it kind of locks people into the idea of I can continue to just consume and throw something away. I think for us, we're really trying to go at this whole concept of single use altogether and not just single use plastic. And so to me, it still entrenches the mindset of the one-way throwaway disposable culture and that's what we're really trying to undo. And I think that, you know, getting reuse systems in place, we've been really excited about having reuse services in places like stadiums and concerts and, you know, at aquariums and zoos, places where lots of people congregate, because we think that these are places where people can be open to kind of the culture shifting of norms, right? That the norm has for so long has been one way throwaway. And if all of a sudden I go to the, you know, to go catch a baseball game at Fenway Park, and now there's a reusable cup service there, and I've got, you know, signs up on the wall that say, hey, Fenway Park has saved X zillion cups in the last year, and they've saved this many carbon emissions, and they've saved this much water. And oh, by the way, they've also saved this much money, that it sends a signal to, you know, the fans and the consumers that, hey, not only is this a better experience to drink out of a reusable cup than kind of a chintzy little throwaway cup, but it's also good for the environment. And oh, there's money to be saved here. And to kind of plant that seed in the minds of other folks that might go out and go back to their community and say, hey, how do I make that happen in my community or my business or whatever I'm involved in?
Well, you know, sadly, it reminds me a lot of when the compostable cup showed up at stadiums and arenas, and these concessionaires who are trying to do the right thing, you know, okay, well, people don't like single-use plastic, so we'll go to compostable. And the problem with that, of course, was that, you know, we all know the challenges without having compostable industrial composting in most markets, and the fact that most of it breaks down into microplastics and all those sort of issues, whole other podcast. But and so then Ball comes along with these, hey, infinitely recyclable aluminum cups. And people, oh, that's great. Recycling is good, right? So they have leaned into a complete sustainability pitch on it. And in my mind, it's almost greenwashing. I mean, it's frustrating for me to see this, that they're basically, I view, taking advantage of these buildings, these concessionaires, the teams, and so forth, by saying that this is a better solution than single use plastic. And in some ways, it's almost questionable if you look at the overall environmental impact of what they're talking about. You know, the amount of virgin material that needs to go into them. I know probably better than anybody, the average recycling rate at a live event, whether it's a festival, a football game, a concert, a rodeo, it's 10%, okay? So 20% of these are going into the waste stream. And it's sad for me. The other thing I'm frankly a little concerned about, because I had an opportunity to speak this last year at the Super Bowl with a bunch of team owners about our cup, and Ball were speaking as well. And they said, well, the question was asked, well, is it safe to drink out of aluminum like this? And, you know, of course, we know, like in beer cans and so forth, it's fine for that. But what happens, and this is what they said, is that if these these infinitely recyclable aluminum cups are put in a dishwasher, the coating comes off of that, and then you're drinking against direct aluminum. And so, you know, I appreciate that people are trying to come up with solutions. I'm frustrated that it's being positioned as a sustainable choice, a better sustainable choice. Aluminum is a great material for airplanes and engine blocks and other stuff that lasts forever. It's not the best use of a resource and energy for something that's used once and then thrown out.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So, Michael, we're talking about, at the end of the day, we're talking about how do we build a circular economy. And I know you've been working on this and thinking about this for decades now. So for you, like, what is a circular economy and how do we get there?
That's a tremendous question. And it's fascinating because you're right. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. And I want to say also, I'm a very practical, realistic approach to the whole environmental solutions. I mean, we've got to work in the systems we've got. We've got to work in a way that's going to be embraced by business and community and everything. So I'm totally realistic. I'm not some sort of idealistic, you know, in not being grounded in reality. Okay. That said, when I hear circular economy, it's equivalent to me many times all these venues and festivals brag and say, hey, we're zero waste events. And in fact, what they are defining as zero waste is, well, they've set up recycling bins and they have trash bins. And they're calling that a zero waste event, right? Because they are sending stuff to trash and recycling. And in my mind, that's not zero waste. A zero waste event is where you don't have waste, right? In the same way, defining a circular economy, you know, I just was at a conference all this week and, you know, everybody is all talking about the circular economy and talking about recycling and the pellets and da da da, all sort of stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, that's not really circular, because what's happening right now, especially, the system is broken and stuff is not happening. And it may not ever make economic or operational sense. In my mind, the only true circular economy is a reuse economy.
That's right. Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think, Matt?
I mean, I'm there with you. I mean, I think that a lot of the circular economy buzzword has basically been used to say, oh, we're gonna recycle better. I think that's been kind of the primary focus of a lot of the circular economy conversations, is how do we close the loop and how do we get, you know, more and better recycling? And I, as Miriam, my wonderful colleague at Upstream, you know, told me, I mean, 10 or 15 years ago when we were, you know, working on extended producer responsibility legislation. So he said, you know what, Matt, if we just like endlessly recycle, or more better, recycle too much stuff, we really won't have done much for the planet. And that really fundamentally changed me, that statement. And, you know, I've been working with Miriam ever since on this idea that we really need to be figuring out how to get people what we want and need without generating any waste in the first place. And that we can't have a decent standard of living for 7.5 billion people and growing based upon a one-way throwaway model. We just have to do better. And so for me, you know, the circular economy really is an economy where we are, you know, in this continual stewardship of the resources that we take from the planet. And the best way to do that is through creating these, you know, reuse systems for getting us what we want and need. And you guys are right on the forefront, and it's fun to have had an hour on the show with you guys today. So we're moving into just the quick rapid fire fun part here, but maybe I'll start with you, Keiko. You know, tell our listeners one thing that you're really excited about in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, 2020 was, it was a super hard year. It was a very, very, very hard year, but it forced us to be innovative. It forced us to really drill down on our priorities. It forced us to rethink and reexamine. And so we're arriving to 2021. Just, I am feeling deeply thankful and very excited. I'm super excited about the new administration and really the shift and change that I'm seeing in society and in culture, and seeing, you know, all indications that we are ready for very, very big change. And our team, your team, our collaborators, our colleagues, you know, are at the ready to meet this time. It's super exciting.
What about you, Mike? What's one thing you're really excited about for 2021?
And I'm excited about the new administration, what's happening. I think that there's been sort of a collective, positive, deep breath that it feels like the world's been having over the last several weeks. I think that the world is going to come together in ways it hadn't before. I think that, you know, there's talk about going back to normal. I think that what was normal before wasn't really normal. And I do think that we're on the path to start getting closer to that on so many areas. Living in Minneapolis, where we're based, it's been really a very personal thing for us, the entire organization and the entire community. And I feel like there's some really good progress. There's a lot of work to be made, but I'm hopeful that 21 is going to, as Keiko said, be way better than 20.
Yeah, me too. I think that what we're seeing is people believing in new possibilities in ways that they haven't before. So, you know, we've been asking, you know, fun questions of our guests on the podcast recently because we've been in lockdown with COVID. I've been curious, like, what's on replay on your favorite song or artist list, and what does this say about you? Keiko, you want to handle that one first?
Sure. Longtime lover of Angélique Kidjo, beautiful,
fantastic
musician.
She's great.
She's wonderful.
What about you, Michael?
Ben Folds, fun, happy, hilarious, talented dude.
So great. What about shows? What's a favorite show that you've watched in the last 3 months, and what does this say about you?
I love The Queen's Gambit. What does it say about me?
So good.
I'm in it for strategy and the long game and beautiful dresses.
You like quality cinema. It's such a beautiful show. Oh my God. You have to watch it if you haven't watched it, folks. What about you, Michael?
Well, I don't know if this counts, but instead of getting drunk every night to deal with 2020, what my wife and I would do is we watch Stephen Colbert every night as an analgesic to get through the day.
Oh, so great. Yep. Like a warm, comforting cup of cocoa watching Stephen Colbert, right?
Right.
That's great. So what's one of the top things that our listeners can do from your perspective to help accelerate the reuse revolution?
I'll jump in on this one. I mean, I think, you know, from our ware standpoint, it's ask restaurants for it. From our cup standpoint, it's ask concessionaires for it. It's buildings, festivals, promoters, you know, ask politicians for it. Get involved in the city council work, some of the stuff we've talked in the past. You know, ask your waste management provider about it. It's basically, you know, getting, what does it take to sort of get everybody speaking about this and making it a thing? What one of the things that I'm old enough where I've been doing this so long that, you know, when I first started doing activism stuff, it was snail mail, right? To try to connect with people.
Right.
And where we're at right now with an emoji driven communication system, which is you can connect with people instantly and change can happen. And what I believe, and upstream, you guys are just doing such a phenomenal job with this and leading the way in a lot of ways. I think everybody should become members and supporters of Upstream to accelerate the reuse. I'm serious. I mean, it's like you guys are really at the cutting edge of this, and it needs to happen. And, you know, there's other entities that are out there that are, you know, we're in communication. Tom over at Loop is a good friend. And, you know, I think that It's a matter of again, super ornical, all of us figuring out how to work together to have the greatest impact and create the change that's needed.
That's great. So great. And thanks for the kudos. We really appreciate it and the support. So Keiko, you get the last question. Where can our listeners learn more about you and what you guys are up to?
So hit us up on our websites, rcup.com, rware.com, rturn.com. And we're also on Instagram at rcupworld and rware2go.
So great to spend an hour with you guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And folks, if you want to find out more information about what Upstream is up to, you can visit us at upstreamsolutions.org. You can check out our learning hub. You can get involved in our campaigns and you can find everything you need to change your community. Thanks so much for listening and we'll catch you next time.
And that's our show. If you like what you're hearing, help spread the word. Subscribe to the Indisposable Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Add a review, talk us up. Nobody spreads a message like you. The Indisposable Podcast is brought to you by Upstream, sparking innovative solutions to plastic pollution, envisioning a world without it, and empowering businesses, communities, and individuals to imagine and co-create this future with us. You can find resources mentioned on today's episode, as well as learn more about Upstream's work at www.upstreamsolutions.org. Follow us on social and join the movement. There's a better way than throwaway.